Welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about the Ultra Force and other Malibu comic topics. Of course, on my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh, this could hurt when we get to Nightman.
Yeah, something about those jazz saxophonists. Well, let's start with, as we always do, the solicitations. All right. You have the link, JT.
Yes, I do. I'm looking at it right now.
All right.
Action Lab, Amp, Antarctic. Well, I got the new Gold Digger special.
Excellent.
Which, one of these days I'm going to get around collecting that series.
Archie Comic Publications with another Sonic Super. Okay, let's move on.
Although I did see, I don't think it was the, I think it was like Archie's Double Digest. I saw at the grocery store tonight had a cover done by a friend of, and I guess a friend of the show, you could call it, Giselle from
Menage. Giselle Agassi?
Yeah. It was like a giant snow head of Archie, and everyone's just, you know, throwing snowballs and having a good time. And I keep forgetting that she's doing covers and work for Archie now.
Yes, while at the same time doing several wonderful comic strips you can read online on the interwebs. So, Gary's back.
Oh, back in Menage.
Back in Canada.
You know, I haven't read it the last week or so. So at least Giselle's working. I feel sorry for that. Please don't shun me, Internet.
All right. Well, Sticky Daily Buds is getting hilarious.
Well, basically anytime Dylan shows up in anything.
Yes, is Dylan like the friend that you always wish you had?
I don't think I always wished I had, but I'd probably have more fun if he was around.
Okay. Well, moving on. Let's see here.
Big Finish.
Some wonderful Doctor Who stuff. In the pre-show, I was telling JT about how most modern Doctor Who fans are posers.
And I didn't disagree with them.
I mean, I was hardcore. It was early 1990s, sneaking in the middle of the night on a Saturday night, watching classic Doctor Who on PBS right after Are You Being Served?
No Faulty Towers?
No Faulty Towers.
Yeah. Although I got called a while back when Doctor Who first started coming out, probably like the second David Tennant season. People, at least fans that, like, wasn't friends of mine, but people I knew as Doctor Who fans, they called me a poser because they said I liked Eric Roberts as the Master in the Paul McGann movie. I was like, well, I haven't seen the movie yet. I said, I like the idea. Come on, it's Eric Roberts. If there's one thing the man can play, it's cheesy villains.
He starts at one corner of the scene and thoroughly chews to the other corner.
Well, that's just his method. I'm just saying. But yeah, no, I would like to get into some of this Big Finish audio stuff, especially stuff involving the Eighth Doctor, because, I mean, there's
tons of stuff.
Yeah,
but to me though, you know, it's the third Master that I always liked, because the third Master to me has always been the most camp.
That kind of campy, suave kind of.
Yes, the kind that that was perfectly recreated in the Rowan Atkinson Doctor Who special.
Yeah, now I know the one.
That Master was perfect.
Well.
I mean, the camp, the way that he furls his cape.
Yeah.
I mean, the Master has to be camp. I mean, when you have a Master throwing Force Lightning, teaming up with a Doctor who's shooting a revolver, you know you fucked up.
Yeah.
Moffat.
I mean, I like that, but that was a little too over the top. I mean, well, no, like the... Oh, what's
the Master shooting Force Lightning at Rassilon, teaming up with the Doctor shooting a revolver. You fucked up.
No, I don't disagree about that. I'm just saying the one thing they did right was in the series. There's a second Tennant series finale. Is the one with where he teams up with Martha Jones and Captain Jack Harkness at the end, and they get back to modern day Britain and they see the like he figures out who the Master is. John Saxon, they have that news thing where he says, you know, the country is sick. The country needs medicine. In fact, I would go so far as to say that what this country really needs is a doctor. And I was like, I love that line, because that's perfect Master right there. Because it's campy, it's kind of over the top, it's him twisting the knife. It's not him giving a double thumbs up and laughing like a maniac while his, you know, what do you call, like, the council or the cabinet, when he gasses his cabinet and he's sitting there, you know, laughing his ass off, wearing the oxygen mask, giving a thumbs up as all these people die. It's like, no, that's not the Master.
I know, that Master has played a little too camp. Too camp, not menacing enough. Not classic camp. That was more...
There's not that suave sense of menace.
Yes.
That the third Doctor had. Let's see.
Or the fourth, or the fifth. But let's move on. Let's see. From the Doctor to... Let's see here. We got some Bongo comics. We got some Boom comics. Nothing that's really interests me there.
Broadsword, which is like Xenoscope. And if you tell me you read it for the story, I'm going to call you a liar.
There's some Dark Horse. Ooh, got Dark some. Horse. Why people would be interested in more Mass Effect comics when BioWare killed the universe, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they got stuff like the Chronicles of King Conan, which is one Conan title. I loved picking up back issues of that when I was a kid.
Mm.
Yeah, the Mass Effect stuff, eh. I know you've said before in the show you don't like how they're doing, like, you know, season 10 of X-Files and season 8 and 9, now 10 of Buffy.
Well, let me tell you, what do you think of the Angel and Buffy having superhuman sex slamming into mountains scene in the comic book? Okay, point proven. Let's move on.
Well, building up to and saying that, Ben, is I haven't really read a lot of the Buffy stuff. Like, I've got all the season 10 of X-Files. That's just because I'm a big X-Files fan. But I like more what they've done with the Serenity or Firefly / Serenity comics, in that it's stories, you know, takes place during. There've been one miniseries which took place during the series. There was one between the series and the movie. There's this new miniseries which takes place just after the movie, you know, and I like stuff like that where you take it through specific periods in the continuity, because that way you can do a full and complete story and it can stand on its own and be part of the greater, you know, universe without having to have watched, like, say, the previous season or something like that.
So, Serenity Now! Serenity Now!
Exactly.
Okay, let's move on. We got, I'm seeing nothing that interests me in DC.
But the only thing that I'm reading that I see in here that I like right away is the DC versus Masters of the Universe.
This is what confuses me. You have Superman number 28, and the art, the variant cover is...
A steampunk edition?
No. Well, the regular cover is Ed Bennis.
Yeah.
But it's just Superman on it. It's Ed Bennis. What the hell?
He's a decent artist. I mean...
There's no women on the cover.
The devil, you say.
All right, let's move on.
An Ed Bennis cover without an attractive woman and little to no clothing?
Let's see. Let's go to Dynamite. We got some more Army Darkness versus Hackslash. We already talked about that.
Yeah, I was bummed out the way that miniseries ended, really. Or at least, I don't know, it ended with it was almost like ended in a Back to the Future kind of way, in that, for those that haven't, I don't want to spoil it for those that haven't read the Hackslash series, because the way they end it was like, it was really good, but they do this weird time travel thing involving the Necronomicon from Army of Darkness, and Ash and Cassie Hack part as allies, but nothing of any real consequence happens.
Mm.
And that's why I feel bummed out by stuff like that.
Ah, let's move on.
The only other thing I see, one thing I see on here that I did like was the newest issue of Doc Savage, which I mentioned before, like each issue takes place in like a different decade of Doc Savage's history, which is real nice. This one was actually... It has something happens to Doc Savage. He loses a bunch of his friends, and it's, you know, it's not your typical Doc Savage adventure. So, and you got the Robotech Voltron crossover, which I completely forgot even existed. Like, at first, I got the first issue because I heard of this, like, awesome, it's Robotech, it's Voltron. And then, like, 3 months later, we get issue number two. It's closer to like just 2 months, but that's like, as much as I love Robotech and I love Voltron, you know,
they don't love you back.
Well, obviously not, because they didn't call for like 2 months. I've moved on.
Okay, well, we have IDW doing other people's properties,
as always.
You have the X-Files, which you were talking about. You have the Ghostbusters. You got the Judge Dredds. You got the Turtles. You got the.
I like the fact that they brought back the Marvel Transformers continuity with the Transformers Regeneration, because they ended it on, was it issue 81, and they weren't done with the story yet back then. I mean, it was unfortunately just, you know, they didn't finish it, and then the sales were such that they canceled at that time. But they brought back, I forget, is Simon Furman, is he the artist or the writer?
He's the writer.
He's the writer. And I mean, Furman, sorry, I just couldn't remember for a moment there. Furman was the writer of the Marvel series back in the day. So when IDW got this, they got the Transformers license, and they had a lot of success resurrecting the Marvel G.I. Joe continuity with A Real American Hero Volume 2. You know, they got Furman back. He's like, hey, let's finish your story. And it's been a lot of fun reading that, because I still remember those comics from back in the day. And you look on other stuff on there, it's just Ghostbusters I read in trade format. Like, I can't just read one issue at a time with that. So,
like, I remember one Ghostbusters trade where it actually has the Ghostbusters actually, you know, split up and dumped into each into different sectors of time. You actually have Peter Venkman as a sheriff Ghostbuster
in the Old West.
And yes,
Ray. Was it? Yeah, Ray basically becomes like a Merlin type sorcerer in medieval times, and then you go to the future, and Egon has become like this all powerful despot.
But Janine actually made her own Ghostbusters branch as well.
Yeah,
in teaming up with Leonardo da Vinci's ghost.
Well, if you're gonna team up with a ghost, that's a pretty good one to team up with. I like the storyline where they finally went outside of NYC, and then, you know, they went through like Boston and New Orleans, and they go to like Area 51, stuff like that. There's even a side story where Winston takes a side gig and he goes with his girlfriend to Las Vegas, and he uses, and they make mention in an earlier issue where he's taking night school classes to become a lawyer, because apparently Lewis took off. And it's just, I love this series. Like, they actually, like, the guys that write it are true dyed-in-the-gray-wool, you know, Ghostbusters fans. You know, and it's, I don't know, it's just, you can't, if you like Ghostbusters, there's no way in hell that you can't like the comic. And if you say you don't like the comic, you're a filthy liar.
Well, let's move on to some comics that we don't like.
Let's see what Image... Artifacts, Bounce, Chew's actually really good. Five Weapons is kind of silly, because it's, you know, what if your parents were world-class assassins? Well, they would send you to this school, and you have to pick one of the five weapons clubs to become a part of. And it kind of, like, I read the first trade, wasn't entirely impressed by it. A friend of mine got me into the Manhattan Projects, which has been... I would almost say wonderfully subversive, because it takes guys like Alan Oppenheimer, Albert Einstein, like that were purportedly part of, you know, they were part of the Manhattan Project. The idea was the Manhattan Project was, we're going to create the world's first atomic bomb. That was actually the cover story, and they there's all like the weird super pseudoscience, like dimensional travel, and, you know, other sort of like fringe science basically. But then you find out stuff in the comic, like Alan Oppenheimer isn't Alan Oppenheimer. It's actually his psychotic twin brother who killed him, ate his brain, and absorbed his knowledge. And that's why Oppenheimer, that's how they explain why Oppenheimer was so smart, that he was like this brain cannibal that would absorb people's knowledge by eating their minds. And Albert Einstein, the story, is actually an evil twin of Einstein from another universe that crossed over and replaced the Albert Einstein that we all knew.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, I'm just saying, mad scientists, don't trust those guys.
Marvel Comics? Not new seeing anything I'm looking forward to.
New Fantastic Four. Oh, look, it's a new number one from Marvel Comics. I'm sorry, I love Marvel. I love Marvel more than DC at this point. I'm just getting a little sick of them going a year.
Number ones again.
Yeah, it's just like, why?
I see them pushing Miracle Man number 3, which we already talked about. Oh, boy. Okay. I think that's it for the solicitations this week.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be talking about the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian has superhero antics and sexy girls. Catch updates weekly at DeCian.com and NoSuperPants.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back. Tonight we're, of course, talking about the Ultra Force from Malibu Comics. And let's start with some of these characters here. So we have, honestly, I hate most of Ultra Force.
Well, let's talk about the Captain Marvel in the room, shall we?
Oh, boy, the slime boy. Prime.
Yeah.
Now, that's prime.
Oh, not even Gary Chalk can make that comic, that cartoon work. But no, I mean, Prime was, like I said, it was their Captain Marvel. I mean, he's a young boy, he's coming of age, he's dealing with all these fluids coming out of his body. Except most of these fluids seep all the way through his skin and clothes and form into like some, well, he basically forms into like a muscle bound superhero. And he has like, I love the fact a lot of these characters, like they're loosely inspired by
a lot of these
characters. But Prime, if you thought anything other than Captain Marvel, you need to stop reading comics.
I really have a problem with Prime because Prime's supposed to be like a commentary on superheroes at the same time. And it's like, at the same time, you know, I gotta be honest, the writers weren't strong enough to carry that. Because at first Prime's all like, gee golly, you know, and all that.
Well, yeah, he went with the, like, it was a straight up Captain Marvel.
And then for a while, he was like Punisher Prime.
Yeah, because he had, like, the headband and the scar and spikes and a chain, which I could almost, like, it's comics. So I can understand him growing a cape and all that, but where you realize that's just basically a giant skin tag that's dangling off his belt. Like, it's stuff like that is just weird
in
Ultra Force. And then you look at guys like, well, there was Prototype. Again, if you thought anything other than Iron Man reading that comic, you need to stop reading comics.
Yeah, there were not many original, I'm my own original character. No.
Well, okay, we spoke before the show. You mentioned at the top of the show, the Nightman. I mean, the Nightman was, I mean, the origin for the character is tied into another Ultraverse comic called The Strangers, where this out-of-control cable car in San Francisco is struck by a bolt of lightning, or so they think, and a number of people on this thing are given, like, weird, you know, ultra-human powers. And that's the thing we should mention. They're not called superhumans. They're not called post-humans or...
Metahumans.
They're called ultra-humans. Ultra-heroes. Ultra-villains. Well, they needed something to mark it, anyhow. And so these people spun off into the Strangers, and I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later on. But the Nightman is this jazz saxophonist, Johnny Domino, who he gets hit. He's driving his, I think he was driving a Prowler. He gets hit by this cable car. He gets a piece of shrapnel in his brain that destroys the part of the brain that tells the body, like, is the sleep center of his brain, I think it was. And he picks up mental powers. In fact, he picks up only one power, and that he can only hear the evil thoughts of somebody else. Okay.
So he this basically turned him into a quasi combination of the Shadow, Dr. Midnight, and an Insomniac.
Yeah, I mean, and there were cool there were cool elements to the comic. I mean, the fact that, you know, he kind of had this little bit of Batman where he went out in, like, one version of the costume and he kind of got his ass kicked before he figured out what he was doing. And but yeah, it was basically there. It was a very pulp-inspired character. One of the things I did like in the comic was that he operated a pirate radio station where sometimes it would, you know, bookend the story in a particular issue where he would open up asking a question, just talking about stuff, and then he would play some jazz either over the airways or he would actually, you know, perform on a saxophone and like that. I like that idea because, you know, it's like I said, it's a very kind of pulp aesthetic. But I mean, you look at other characters in the Ultraverse, they had Ghoul, who was on Ultra Force as well.
Ultra Force!
Yeah, which Ghoul came out of a series, I think it was called, was it The Exiles?
Yeah, the thing is, he actually is probably the most original of the Ultra Force characters.
Yeah,
and he really is like a zombie man.
Yeah, the thing is, like, yeah, he came out of the title The Exiles, which is basically, I would almost say that Ultraverse, the writers ripped this off from the Bloodline storyline that DC Comics had go through their annuals around this time, where there is this thing known as the Theta virus. Which, if you contracted it and you weren't treated properly, you would die. But if you were treated, you would develop superhuman powers. And Ghoul was one of these guys who got this thing, except his powers were basically killed him, except he got better.
And he's kind of gross to look at, but another
he's like
character.
Swamp Thing. He could lose parts and he could reattach them or grow them back.
Swamp Thing.
You are amazing. Oh, God.
You are everything.
Groovy.
But you forgot Hard Case.
See, Hard Case is one that I have a hard time with, and I have never... Well, he was more or less... I want to say he was an original character, but when I think about it, he's basically a better version of Wonder Man.
Exactly. Because Wonder Man had that brief going to Hollywood stint, too.
Yeah, but I mean, my thing with Hard Case is, like, I've never been able to say, do I hate it? Do I like it? Do I hate it? Do I like it?
That's the biggest problem with Ultra Force as a whole is I don't have enough of an opinion to hate or like it because it was barely there. And
it was there for like 4 years and then it was gone.
It didn't really do a good enough job to impress me while it was there.
Yeah. Whereas with me, I think the reason that I love a lot of the Ultra Force characters and, you know, the other Ultraverse comics was the fact that I got in on the ground floor of this entire story. You know, like, I got in there with issue number one, and there was stuff that I picked up and I dropped like any comic reader should. But I actually got in the ground floor. This is like, you know, back in the day when my dad was a kid, maybe he felt the same way when Marvel Comics started, and he was able to get in on the ground floor of, like, you know, Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and all that. But yeah, it's, through the thick of it, Hard Case is probably one of the better comics to come out.
Yeah, it's true. He was a little Wonder Man-y,
they had the whole thing where he still had his powers, but he made a living off of them as like an action movie star, and that was probably the most, I don't want to say mature, but it was probably the most well-written title that Ultraverse put out.
There were other titles that they put out.
There was, Mantra, which is, let's face it, this almost slides into the territory of, don't tell me you're reading this for the story. Because it's basically, it's kind of a little bit of Highlander with a whole lot of, like, I don't know, Scarlet Witch or Doctor Strange or somewhere. It's this immortal warrior named Lucas, who is, he works for the Archmage. Lucas. Yeah. I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
I wasn't going for that, Lucas.
Well, it's the first one sprang to mind. But it is basically, he's this immortal warrior that's constantly reincarnated into another body. And it's not like he's reincarnated as a child. Like, say he's reincarnated as a man, he'll die and get reincarnated to, like, some 50-year-old guy taking care of his grandkids. And when that guy dies, he'll get reincarnated into this woman who is a police officer. So,
the thing is, the woman was the first. That was the first woman. And the thing is, the biggest thing with the Mantra story was he just basically took all these people's lives. As soon as he got the new body, he just went right back to his mission without caring about their lives.
Yeah, he just basically see ya and walked out the door.
And gets that body killed, and it basically has no care. So basically, the Archmage's like, okay, I'm giving you one more body, and you ain't gonna like it.
Yeah. Like, he's been constantly reincarnated into men. This is the first time he becomes a woman. Then he doesn't immediately walk out because she's got, like, two kids and an ex-husband and stuff like that. And,
well, he does immediately walk out the situation he was put in, but
well, yeah,
that's another story.
And then, of course, when they have, like, one of the first big crossovers they did between all the Ultra heroes, you know, Prime becomes somewhat enamored with her because, you know, he passes out as Prime and he wakes up as Kevin, who's the kid that becomes Prime, and he's basically, you know, sitting there in like his slime slow clothes, and she's like, hey kid, and I remember that crossover because the perspective was he's looking right down the valley. You know, he's looking right at two huge tracts of land, and she's like, my face is up here, kid. You know, so and every time they would meet thereafter, he'd always be like like that. What else is there for Ultra Force? There is Mantra, Nightman, Prime. I mean, Prototype, like I said, it is this kid, Jimmy, who basically gets taken off the street by this, was it Ultra Tech was the company, and they basically, you know, get him work him out until he gets like an athlete's body, and then they implant like cybernetic technology in him that allows him to control this flying battle suit. And then they had what's known as the Black September event.
That's basically where Marvel made it official and said, okay, all your characters, we're going to destroy 99% of all these characters. You're never going to see them again.
Yeah. And then they have, like, afterwards, they bring back the, I forget that, is it Jim something, like the original guy they had in the original Prototype suit.
Yes.
Bob Campbell. It wasn't Jim, it was Bob Campbell. And he comes back. In the original run of Prototype, he was this character who became known as the hero known as Ranger. And then after Dark September, Bob became Prototype again with a slightly updated suit. And, you know, and also with the Black September thing, that's where some Marvel characters were stuck in the Ultraverse for a while, like Black Knight, Sienna Blaze, and Reaper from like the Mutant Liberation Front. Juggernaut was there. And I don't like there was a lot of titles that I liked in the Ultra Force. I mean, in the Ultraverse line, like there was some that was really good. Like there's some outright ripoffs, like the character of Sludge, which is basically this. If Man Thing and Swamp Thing were ripoffs of, or they were homages to the Heap, Sludge was straight up a ripoff. Because it's this guy, the story goes, he's like this cop who gets covered in, like, he gets awash in toxic chemicals and sewer sludge and becomes this muck-encrusted mockery of a man. You had Rune, which is basically an ancient vampire who ate souls. And was it Barry Windsor Smith did some art in that, which is absolutely beautiful art, but the story just didn't make sense. They, of course, had a S.H.I.E.L.D. variant called Aladdin.
Well, yes. That makes total sense.
In total sense. They had the... Solitaire was another one. It only ran for about 26 issues total between two different series. But Solitaire is about this guy. His dad was a mob... Like, he's a mob kingpin. And outwardly, it was very much... even the costume, if you look at it, like a color inversion of, like, the Huntress getup in terms of, like, how the colors are placed. But he's basically becomes this masked vigilante that tries to take down his father's criminal empire. There's Codename Firearm, which was this basically an expat member of British Secret Intelligence operating as, like, a hard luck detective in San Francisco, which was kind of... I mean, it's been done to death before, but it was entertaining nonetheless. And Looking over here, like, there's... like, it's like I said in the first episode of Comic Connoisseurs, the 90s was this... It was akin to the 60s comic boom in a way that there was all these new comics came in, all these interesting ideas. I mean, not all of them got to play, and not all of it stuck, but, I mean, there were some interesting things. I mean, Marvel, yeah, like you said, Marvel bought the comics, and they canceled everything and restarted with a new number one. Big shock. I mean, because Marvel's never... Well, yeah, it's Marvel. And... like, they basically, the Ultraverse is, I forget, Earth number, 6019 or something in the Marvel multiverse. It's just what bums me out the most about this is the fact that there was a lot of these cool ideas. They had all this crossover between the Marvel characters and the Ultraverse, and eventually they got separated. Here's the thing. My absolute favorite character to come out of the Ultraverse was the Nightman. I loved that character, and not because of the cheesy TV show. It's like, I can read minds, and I just happen to stumble upon this crate of, like, armor and a flying belt and a cloaking cape and a giant red eye laser thing, and I'll become a superhero. Okay. I just think that the way Johnny Domino went about becoming the Nightman, becoming a hero in the comic book, played a lot better. And then they had this storyline where early in the series he ran across this immortal Celtic serial killer witch, Rhiannon, I think is the proper way of pronouncing her name, who something happened. I haven't read these comics for years, although I still have a lot of these in my collection. Something happened where Nightman is basically copied. Like, Rhiannon creates a mystic double of Nightman who desires, he decides, okay, I'm going to have the same magic powers as you. So he becomes like this serial killer sort of superhero type where he has to kill people and consume their essence every 3 months or something in order to keep his powers and his extended lifespan and all that. And this is what pisses me off about that, because then Black September happens and the original Johnny Domino gets shunted into the Marvel universe. So
he's up with Gambit for a while. I remember that.
So somewhere in the Marvel universe right now, Johnny Domino is wandering around out there doing whatever.
Playing saxophone at a street corner.
And probably in San Francisco. And could potentially run into Daredevil now that they're moving him out there again. So, I mean, I love these comics. Like, there's some really cool stories, I thought, as a kid. I mean, now I look back and they're not that good. But why? And is this Marvel?
I think it's the whole feeling like you're on the ground floor of something that could be big.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing for you, because I get it, too. Because I know what it's like feeling like, oh, this is going to be the next big thing. I'm on the ground floor. I get it. It just didn't happen, JT.
Should have, damn it.
But let's wrap up part one of this look at the Ultraverse. Part two, next week, we're going to talk about the actual cartoons and the television shows. This is your host, Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And we are saying goodnight.
So long.